and welcome to the latest edition of the Diplomats Japan Affairs Podcast. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Zach.
And today we're going to start off by talking about some surprising new data released by the Japanese Ministry of Education. So based on the latest figures from 2011, the number of Japanese students who opt to study abroad has declined for the seventh year in a row. Just under 60,000 went overseas that year, which is down nearly a third from 2004, when the number peaked. So the Education Ministry blamed the drop on economic sluggishness. So what do you think, Zach?
Well, of course, I think the economic factor is a big part of the issue. I mean, the number one country that Japanese students go to study abroad at is the United States. So obviously, the cost of living is comparably high, just like Japan. But I think it's more to that. And I mean, we could also talk about the cultural aspect, for example. I think majority of the students who've been sent abroad have been concentrated in areas like California, where there already is a high Japanese population, and other areas of the West Coast. So I wonder if it's a sign of increasing kind of cultural isolation in a way that's spreading among people, and that's one reason for the trend. I mean, the economy is definitely one of the reasons, but I think that this trend has not just an impact on the educational environment, but I think it has ripple effect on the relationship between Japan and countries like the U.S. as well. I recently went to a speech by a former ambassador of the United States to Japan, and he said that the number of students coming abroad to Japan from Japan to the United States and the relationship that they create acts as a pillar between the relationship between the United States and Japan. I know the Japanese Education Ministry has been trying to turn this number around, and they right now have a very ambitious goal of sending abroad 120,000 students by 2020. We'll see if they're able to achieve that. Whether it is or not, we're not sure, but I think no matter what, it's going to have a big impact.
No, I agree with you on the cultural aspect. So when I was a university student back in the U.S. not too long ago, there was a flood of Asian exchange students, and my university had a large number of Chinese and South Koreans. But in my 4 years as an undergrad, I don't remember a single Japanese student on campus. Another thing is, as you said, when I do meet people in Japan who've studied abroad, nearly all of them, at least the ones who've gone to the U.S., have studied in California or Hawaii, you know, places with very large concentrations of Japanese. So it does seem that even when they leave Japan, a lot of Japanese prefer homogeneity. I do believe that there's definitely some deeper cultural aspect and not just an economic one. All right, so one of the pillars of Japanese culture, at least contemporary culture, is J-pop music. Although J-pop idol groups are undeniably the most popular here, I'm not a huge fan, but I can't deny a fact. it seems that the music industry as a whole is actually declining in Japan.
Yeah, that's right. It looks like they've posted a drop in music sales, about over 15% in this last year. And that actually was one of the major factors that the growth of the music industry globally shrunk in the past year, actually. And I think there's some unique factors about the Japanese domestic market for music consumption. One thing that really struck me when I was reading about the Japanese music market is that the majority of the sales are sold in hard copies. So, for example, CDs or vinyl or records. And it seems most Japanese consumers have a strong preference for hard copies versus digital media.
Yeah. Something I noticed very quickly after moving here were those giant DVD rental shops. The ones like Tsutaya and Gayo, I think those are the two most popular. Strangely, you can't rent video games in Japan, but you can rent CDs. And some of these stores have, I'm talking multiple floors dedicated to CDs. I just can't believe that people actually go out and rent CDs. It's just kind of mind-blowing to me. And they not only haven't embraced digital downloads, but I've also noticed that purchasing albums on iTunes is sometimes double, triple the price. So I think that maybe licensing fees for the digital music might make it prohibitive or might make owning a physical copy actually cheaper in some cases. I think a lot of Western music consumers, when you buy an album on iTunes, I think in the U.S., even if it's more than 10 tracks, it's $9.99. But in Japan, a single can be 300 yen, and an album can be, you know, 2,000-3,000 yen or more. I also noticed that a lot of my friends keep vinyl collections. You can walk around Tokyo especially and see a ton of record shops. And I even had an ex-girlfriend who had shoeboxes full of mini discs, believe it or not. So, yeah, they do seem to have this I don't know, some type of nostalgia for actually owning a physical a CD or a record and being able to have, you know, that maybe the little jacket insert with the pictures and the lyrics or whatever. Sure.
Well, we'll see if cassettes or 8-tracks come back in fashion as well. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah, who knows? There may be a renaissance.
Yeah. Something else that really caught my attention was the dominance of domestic artists in Japan. In 2013, all top albums that were sold that year were all domestic talent. The situation is actually the same in Korea, which I find fascinating. And it seems like the dominance of these so-called kind of mega groups, these idol groups, and these kind of major players kind of push out competition with other more minor domestic artists, as well as international competition.
Yeah, actually, on a side note, Yasushi Akimoto, the kind of controversial, I think the founder and manager of AKB48, the huge... I'm not going to go into it too much, but yeah, they're just this huge idol girl group. And he was actually just appointed to the Tokyo Olympic board and got a lot of mixed reviews. There's actually been a petition started to try to get him removed from the board because people don't want to have AKB48 controlling the opening ceremony. So yeah, it's interesting that it's declining because it is still very, very visible, especially J-pop. Wherever you go in Japan, it's in your face.
Yeah.
All right, so moving along, last month I wrote about Japan's changing attitudes about the death penalty. And the government's most recent survey, it's from 2012, and it claims that 86% of the population was in favor of capital punishment. But there's been a more recent study done earlier this year by a Japanese researcher at Oxford University. Basically, she found that with the 20,000 Japanese that she polled, less than half were in favor of capital punishment. So, one of Japan's most famous death row inmates, Hakamada Iwao, I think he may be a possible reason for the increased number of people who are kind of turning against the death penalty. So Hakamada's claim to fame is that he's the world's longest-serving death row inmate. And he's been awaiting execution for more than 45 years. He spent a total of 3 decades in solitary confinement, which is something that his family claims has caused him to completely lose touch with reality. And I think it's also caused Amnesty International to take up his cause.
Amnesty International has drawn a lot of attention to this case, and they see it as indicative of multiple problems with Japan's justice system. They've been quoted as saying that Japan's justice system is out of line with international standards. And they've urged the Japanese government for a moratorium on all executions until these cases have more time to be reviewed. I think one of the key problems in this case, especially, is with the amount of time he's been waiting on death row, that his age is also an issue. 99% of cases in Japan that are brought to trial end in conviction. I think this is very unique compared to other countries in the world, and I think it's a key point that Amnesty International has also looked into in the past.
Yeah, another thing that Japan has been criticized for is that the people who are on death row are not told of their execution date. In fact, they don't find out until the morning of their execution. And also, a lot of other countries have adopted lethal injection as the most humane form of capital punishment. But Japan still hangs all of their death row inmates. So,
wow.
So anyway, there's actually a possible light at the end of the tunnel with this whole situation because a judge from the Shizuoka District Court has actually granted Hakamada a retrial and has ordered for his immediate release. The Amnesty International probe into the DNA evidence, I think back in 2012, pointed to his innocence. And there was actually a judge who publicly said that he was not convinced that Hakamada was guilty, but couldn't convince his peers. And yeah, it seems that justice may prevail, but unfortunately, he's 78 years old now. And I don't think that he'll ever be able to get back those, especially those 30 years in solitary confinement. If he has indeed kind of lost his mind, I don't know how he'll be able to reintegrate society and into society and even be able to enjoy his freedom.
Yeah, he's been in jail more than he's spent more time in jail than the time he's been alive.
Yeah.
perhaps this will spur further investigation into the Japanese justice system and shed some light on some of these cases that have really been overlooked.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll have a fresh re-examination of their cases.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much for tuning in to the Japan Affairs podcast. And we look forward to having another conversation next week.
Thank you very much.